All right, so we have C++ people. Who are you? You look familiar.
I'm Steve Teixeira. I'm the group program manager for Visual C++.
All right. Ah. Ale.
I'm Ale Contenti, VC++ dev lead for the VC++ libraries.
Excellent. You've been on Channel 9 a few times now.
Familiar face.
Hello. I'm Kate Gregory. I've been using C++ since before Microsoft had a C++ compiler.
Wow.
And they made me an MVP anyway.
Outstanding. So, I mean, clearly we're here at TechEd 2007 in Barcelona. And you guys, the C++ people, have been talking about what's new in C++. And one of the things that's new in C++ is your direction of moving away from how do we deal with the managed world? How do we interop with the managed world? How do we... So, what is it?
Well, so, you know, if you kind of go back, we had this... I wouldn't call it a competition with C#, mm-hmm. but clearly there was this feeling in the team like, oh, Ollie, did you hear C#'s got blah, blah, blah in the language, and people in C++ kind of went, maybe we should think about blah, blah, blah in the language.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of went that direction for a little while, and then what we found is it was very difficult to be the only native programming language at Microsoft and also compete with the best managed programming language. VB's great too, that things.
It is.
C#. I'm speaking in the curly brace family
yes.
of languages here. So we kind of looked at it, okay, we need to take a fresh look at this. We can't be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out who our customers are, let's figure out what they're doing with our product, let's figure out what unique value this product adds to Microsoft. And as we talked to people, we figured out, you know, they're doing native code stuff. I mean, that's people that are doing managed code stuff often have an easier time doing that stuff in C#. C# is totally geared toward doing that managed code thing. But the people, by and large, that were using C++ were doing it because they were in native code, and they're in native code because they're multi-platform, they have runtime constraints that they need native code for,
mm-hmm.
Or they've got millions of lines of C++ code, and it just makes sense for them to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at these guys, we said, okay, those are our customers, what do they need?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where we get to, okay, well, gee, the product really needs to scale really well to these millions of lines of codes of customers.
Mm-hmm.
Our customers having millions of lines of code, and today, it's okay. They need, guess what? You know, we didn't invest in MFC for a long time, much to Ollie's chagrin, but they're still using it, so let's take care of them.
Yeah,
and so that's part of part of the MFC stuff we're doing that we've announced here at TechEd.
Absolutely.
And on the compiler front end, we've got C++ OX, the next standard right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make a major investment there as well to get all the new native code, cool C++ language stuff into the product as well.
Cool. So Kate, I would ask you, I mean, because you program in multiple languages.
I do.
What is it about C++ that's kept you? I mean, I've always heard the story of C++ developers going, "Hey, if I can do the same thing in C#, I'll definitely do it." And I have heard that. And of course, there are.
It's a big if, though. Right?
Speak.
So there are all kinds of things that you can do in C++ that you cannot do in any other language. I mean, one of my talks here this year at TechEd Europe was about Vista programming. And there are all these new things in Vista, new APIs, new capabilities, new controls, and a lot of them are completely difficult to access from C# or VB, and much easier to access from C++ CLI or from native C++. It's just less work and less effort. And other things, if you can do it from C#, you can do it from managed C++. It depends why you're writing that application as a managed application. What I'm finding is a lot of my customers are using their brand new greenfield stuff in C#, because it's easy to get C# programmers. Most C++ programmers have a lot of experience, they're very senior, they're harder to land.
Okay.
So their brand new greenfield stuff they want to do in C#, and then they're maintaining their old code base. And many of them stopped maintaining it for a number of years. They said, well, it's not moving anyway, we'll just keep compiling it with 6. And I'm trying to persuade them to at least open the project in the newer versions and get us
more change.
Yeah, and then they're like, you'll be 25% faster. Can I not convince you?
Right.
Open the project in 2005 and hit build. How hard is that? Well, it takes 7 hours to build. Yeah, okay. Then you'll be faster for the rest of your life.
Awesome.
Well, now they've got more reasons to move to move forward and to actually start doing things to their MFC applications instead of leaving them kind of frozen in amber, which is what's been happening to a lot of my clients over the last 3 or 4 years.
Absolutely. I mean, so I was at your talk, Ale, on MFC, and there's a lot of new interesting things.
Yeah, we did. We definitely, like Steve was saying, we left MFC under naphthalene for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the right choice in the end, because a lot of people are still using it. There are a lot of C++ customers, a lot of UI still done in MFC. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, it's the million lines of code, but it's not. They are not only frozen million lines of code. There are people are actively enhancing those applications, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it does make sense most of the time to keep on staying in the same framework. It's difficult to move such a big application that have a lot of investment in the frame, in the UI, and so on, all of a sudden snap and change to WinForm or WPF.
Sure.
It's just doesn't make business sense. It's very complex, and so. And so that's what we did. We added, we doubled the size of the MFC class. We doubled the size of the MFC DLL. We doubled the number of the classes inside MFC. And we have a lot of new modern tools to make your application look better. That's great.
Absolutely. And I mean, I find it interesting, though, when you think about, and I'll point this camera squarely at the most senior person here.
That's you.
No, not at all. It's odd to me because when I think about the investment in native code that Microsoft has, I mean, last I checked, Office is written in C++. Windows is mainly written in C and C++.
Visual Studio.
Visual Studio.
SQL Server.
So how is it that we, you know, assume that you guys weren't going to need to invest in the native platform? How does that disconnect happen?
How do we get self-delusional about
that?
You know, I think some people got caught up in the enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. .NET's a great thing. It's a great platform. It works for many, many scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
I think, some people could rightly say that Microsoft had, formerly, we're better about it now.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, there was a little bit of this shiny object syndrome. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, this is the new thing. This is the great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Go start doing this. It's ActiveX controls, or it's, you know, VBX controls, or, you know, historically, whatever those shiny objects were.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think the shiny object thing was a reasonable strategy in the software world up to maybe 10 years ago, 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The number of lines of code people had...
It's more mature, right?
Yeah, they had a reasonable number of lines of code where you could say, WPF, let me just throw away that UI and let me build this new one in WPF, and it was a reasonable proposition. You fast forward to today, and you've got, you know, think of these big companies that build real large-scale applications using C++ predominantly, and they're publicly traded companies. Their managers and shareholders are relying on these products to generate billions of dollars, in some cases, of revenue every year.
Mm-hmm.
They would be crucified to, you know, throw that billion-dollar revenue stream away because there's some shiny new technology object. They've got to have real business reason to be able to make technology investments. And so I think the logic that held us through with the shiny object syndrome 10 years ago was fine, doesn't hold true today. And I think there were some vestiges of that old thinking, hey, we can put out this new framework, this new runtime, and people are going to jump on it. And what we found is that, particularly in the ISV community, where people, you know, have these large applications, greenfields hardly exist anymore. You know, think about who were the big ISVs 10 years ago. Who are they today? It's the same list of people. It's the same companies.
Yeah.
And there aren't green fields. There, you know, big new applications come out every now and then, but by and large, it's people are evolving the same stuff, and it's a brown field.
Okay.
And that's why we have this, you know, native code's our first priority, but our second priority is how can we let them leverage all that native code, that core investment, and use Interop to get to all the new stuff.
True.
There's also that part of understanding what is big native code here. I mean, think about someone joining a team when you have a million lines of code or code base.
You're welcome aboard.
And welcome aboard and then try to figure out this 100 project in 2 solutions. So we do have some work to do there too. It's not only that go to definition, go to declaration, right click. You need better tools to understand this type of project.
Yeah.
So at the architect level, maybe at the developer level, debuggers. So it's again, it's an end-to-end scenario, right? True. And,
the other thing I see when we're talking about shifting of the emphasis, when people ask me how they can migrate a huge code base over, we tend to start with the big if. Well, if your code is reasonably factored, then you can swap out, you know, your old UI and swap in your new UI. That's a huge if. And I think that in the early years of managed code being available, we've taken care of those people. All the people who had that architecture have done that, and they're happy. I have clients who've got, you know, ASP.NET, C# UIs onto existing business layers in C++. That's fantastic for them. But then there's that other hunk of the population who said, I missed that if. You know, my code is one giant smear, and I can't pull the UI out. I've got all this business logic, you know, in the button click handler or what have you. And so do I throw it all over if I want to make a WinForms or a WPF UI because I don't have a business library? So then you can say to them, oh, okay, we didn't forget about you guys. You can snazz up your UI without having to...
Sometimes not only, I mean, they did bad design. Sometimes really the UI is their main...
That's right, focus. And it's sort of grown organically.
It's really, I mean, something that is really super shiny. That's why, because you do a lot of computation in the UI itself. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so in smeared together.
Exactly.
It's not just bad, right?
No, it's not necessarily bad. It's their reality. Yeah. And so to be able to say to them, well, just leave your native code alone, park it there, and work on your shiny new stuff. Well, I can't, though. Separate like that.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. But you guys are, I mean, we're working on that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to make it easier for people to, say, do WPF from MFC. Right?
Yes.
I mean, that would make sense.
Yes.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Not in VS 2008.
No. And then maybe Office will start using WPF when you guys enable that. I mean, that would be a good test.
You should do a channel 9 with those guys.
Hey, well, Sanofsky isn't over there anymore.
That's
true. So I should be safe.
That's true. In 2008, we don't have any special plumbing, but longer term, it's something we want to look at to do the... Because there's, you know, message maps to event handlers, and those frameworks work fundamentally differently, but, you know, you could theoretically tie those things together, similar to what we did with WinForms and MFC.
But it's interesting that that we're actually kind of coming back to this point, because in the end, it is important that you guys take what you already have as an existing language plus engine and evolve it.
Yes.
But we always come back to, hey, can you do WPF from MFC? Can you do WinForms from blah, blah, blah? So I'm guilty of doing the same thing we always do. So if we then move that away, my question that I would ask is, one of the things that .NET enables and managed code in general is quicker time to market of applications written by medium to medium high skilled developers. Whereas C++, you're going to demand a higher level of skill set off the bat. Because you're not going to always, unless you guys are planning to make it really easy to generate.
It's not very difficult, though, to move your existing UI and add, for example, the label. It's more than a programming skill, I would say it's more of a UI skill, right? You have to sit down and rethink a little bit your UI, a little bit what Office did. Mm-hmm. It's not sure they add new functionality to Office, the latest Office version, but the big thing was the ribbon, right? And it's not that the paste button changed, or they just reorganized and made things easier to find, because that was one of the really super pain points they had. People couldn't find things anymore.
Mm-hmm. People were submitting bugs to them saying, you should have, you know, the ability to count the number of words in a document. And they'd be like, we have that, you know? And if an ISV has a product like that that's maybe grown over time, that used to have, you know, 5 menus, but now it has 11 menus and they have cascading submenus, then those guys might say, we need to rethink the way we present ourselves to the users. We're going to go with a ribbon. They don't have to actually change much of their code because it's the same command routing. It's just changing the way that those options are presented to the user. Mm-hmm. They say, we're going to buy into the new MFC, we're going to put a ribbon on our app, and everything underneath stays the same. And that complicated UI that goes off and does 1,000 lines of calculations
stays complicated.
Still there.
But I mean, you know, the thing is, though, when you think about the separation between UI and algorithms,
right.
I don't consider UI algorithms, but of course there are algorithms that generate UI. But the business stuff, you know, what if C++ evolved into being, this is the language you use to build your highly scalable, performant, cross-platform engines.
Right.
And if you want it to run on Windows only, at least for today, and you to have a WPF UI, you just tack that shell onto it.
Right.
Else, you tack your MFC shell onto it. I mean, so kind of at the architectural level,
no,
that would make sense.
That's a good architecture. And when people are starting from scratch, that's the sort of thing I recommend they do. Because when you have that core, you can have different kinds of client windows or whatever other operating system client. Mm-hmm. But you can also have web, or you can expose for web services, something like WCS, so you're exposing the remote stuff around all that core. But if you already have an application, it's a big thing to say, pull this apart into layers. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they didn't mean to write it in a layered way. It's that parts of it grew. So something that started out as being 10 lines got a couple more ifs added and turned into 50 or 100 lines, and it just kind of happens. And then you look back and go, well, like you say, we're going to have to take a hit on revenue for 6 months.
Yeah.
Very few companies can afford to do that, so they have to live with the software that they have.
Sure.
But I like being able to at least provide more like exposure points. So you can say, keep this part native, but maybe write a piece of managed code that knows how to call into your native code, and now you can expose yourself.
Sometimes, yeah, a lot of people do that kind of layer of manage, especially to expose themselves to the outside, right?
Yes.
So people can write plugins and so on. And that's definitely a very good choice. A lot of people are doing it. A lot of big companies are already doing that. So there is space for everybody. So it's not that WPF or Winforce or the managed UI is the answer for everything. Also, WPF sometimes is geared more for more flashy UI and so on.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a more standard looking UI, you don't really need the,
Mm-hmm. If you want my famous gray boxes on a gray background,
that's
absolutely.
You like that?
That's what I'm all about, you know.
Well, you're an engineer.
I am an engineer,
not a designer. You design algorithms.
Transparent is cool.
It is cool. I just don't. You just don't want to trust me to do it. You know, that's the thing. And that's another change that I see in Microsoft as a whole and Visual Studio as a whole is this idea of saying, you have lots of different people on the team, and they don't all use Visual Studio. You know, whether it's team systems exposing out to project managers using the browser or project, or whether it's Expression Blend for the WPF people, and that's something that can continue to spread. And really, when you look at the decisions about big icons in Visual Studio in Visual C++ 2008, we're not going to edit that icon in Visual Studio. That's not going to be the job. You know? And that's a nice thing to see because it sort of encourages developers to look up to the other people on their team and turn to them rather than try to do it all themselves.
So, I mean, what are some of the things, Kate, that you'd like to see these two gentlemen do to help you in your day-to-day C++ life?
People are looking for kind of roadmaps and guidelines, and they're also looking for promises and commitments, and people who were here in Barcelona heard them because you guys have been really transparent about, you know, we're going to do this. If Office changes, we're going to change. If Windows changes, we're going to change. And I'd like to see that word get far afield. You know, if you look at reaction to Vista and in terms of changing, maybe not a language, but the libraries that come with a language to react to Vista, MFC jumped first. I mean, that reaction is in this version now.
Interesting.
So, then that's the promise that whatever else comes down the pipe, you'll be able to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. And I mean, but let's talk hypothetically, right? I mean, do you see that, you know, as our operating systems and applications evolve, what happens when Windows someday, and this is for everybody in the audience, purely hypothetical and pretty much a bunch of BS coming from me, but let's pretend like someday the kernel becomes managed. Right, or they have an architecture where you have multiple kernels, and the one that does all the stuff that you can actually interact with as an application is managed.
Okay.
What does that do to C++ as being required in that scenario, or does it just become a preference of syntax? And it's a hard question, but
I see us evolving away from this hard distinction of it's native or it's managed.
Okay,
that's I actually see the world going more that way. So today it's too terse, it's too firm a delineation between native and managed. And my hope is that we can, instead of an on-off switch, it becomes this rheostat. You can dial it. I want a little more managed. I want a little less managed. I want to use the GC, but I don't want code access security, or I don't want, you know, different other aspects of managed code. My hope and what I kind of push for internally is to try and bring up this world where if I'm in C++, and again, I'm speaking totally hypothetically, no product plans around this, but maybe I want to use the GC, but still have, you know, regular C++ code, not C++ CLI. That would be a cool world to me.
Absolutely.
Right? I can make those kinds of choices. There are many, many complexities in there. Right now we deal with, there's two separate heaps, and CLR gets managed one way, and native code gets managed another way. And
maybe you don't need even to, or another thing, you don't use the GC, but it's an easier way to use those, I mean, classes exposed by events.
Right, you just want to use the library.
Right, the library.
You know, I was talking to an attendee just before I came in here, and he wants to call some SharePoint web services from C++. And he wants to do it all native because he wants to do it on multiple platforms. And I'm like, okay, but you understand that if you didn't manage C++, you know, to call the web service, like 1, 2, 3 lines of code.
Yeah.
If you're going to do this 100% native, you're going to do like the HTTP GET, and then you're going to parse out the XML that comes back. And, well, how are you going to parse the XML? Are you going to store talk for angle brackets? You know, like, it's going to be a lot of code for him. So if all I want to be able to do is just call some libraries, because I like these libraries that are in the .NET framework, that's an interesting, you know, thing to open up to somebody, but still getting used.
So that's interesting. Are you saying that there aren't any C++ classes that I can get my hands on that parse XML?
Oh, sure. You just got to go out and source. He's got to go look for.
He's got to go look for.
He's
it.
He's got to go look for libraries.
Okay.
It's another good point, right? Also, when you were talking about manage the kernel, manage and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, what happened when COM came around, right? So if you think about the kernel, it's only flat C APIs, right? Mm-hmm. Very few of the kernel expose any COM interface. So do you see that distinction between COM and native C++ as strong as you see manage and native? No, it's more of a dial thing, right?
Sure.
That's what it's going to become when the kernel finally is going to evolve to something like that. Even now, Windows is many more times exposing COM interface to enhance, for example, a file dialog. You just don't add a callback. You add a COM interface. You add a COM object. So, you know, you move more to an object way or a C++ way, and you go away from the flat C API. But there are so many still. Win32, it's all a flat API.
That's true.
So MFC and WTL and so many wrappers we wrote around Win32. But it's always Win32 at the bottom. Mm-hmm. There are always those handles for the Windows.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And, sorry to interrupt. You want to say probably, I mean, something good.
That's cool. So, yeah. And so what is it, you know, Kate, I mean, I've asked you this before, but why are you so psyched about C++?
I think it's because I'm a control freak.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. I want to be in charge of how this all goes down. Mm. And I don't necessarily trust tools to make decisions for me.
Okay.
I want to make them. And even if someone can prove to me the tool usually makes the right decision. Now, I've learned to trust optimizers, you know. It's good.
After a while.
It's taken a while. I've been doing this for a long time. But that sense of, you know, this is my code, and I want to be the one who says how it goes, and even just something as simple as for each whatever in thing, sort of, yeah, it kind of creeps me out a little bit. Sometimes I really feel like I want to be the one who...
Plus.
Decide, you know, whether we're going to come at the top or the bottom or whatever. And there generally there's some war story, you know, that I'm going to tell you about. This one time when something messed me around. So I like being, you know, in control. But it doesn't mean that I only ever work in C++. My other life is VB programming. I do a fair whack.
Is that VB.net or VB6?
VB.net. They go in the database and get me a bunch of stuff and bind it to the grid and those sorts of, there's nothing to be gained by trying to do that app in C++ and CLI. It's just pulling your hair out, and there's no samples to copy from those. Well, the stuff I do in C++ is the stuff that's done better in C++.
Okay.
Not the stuff that you could do in the language of choice.
So, I mean, the thing is, though, we can all remember that things like Code Red, things like Microsoft share price going down, does have to do with bad code written in C++. Because you have so much power.
Or maybe C.
But because you have so much... But you have the potential of making mistakes.
If C++ had a motto, it would be, you're the programmer. It's your foot. True. So where things become a problem is when it's not actually your foot, it's the foot of everyone who's running.
But Charles is right that, I mean, we need to actually help the programmer out there not to shoot himself. So that's why the libraries should come around and give you better tools, right? That's what we are doing now. We give you TR1, which is the technical report one, so we give you better tools like shared PTR that lets you manage the resource, the memory resource in a very C++ way. You're still in control. Everything is done at the right time, and you know when it's done, when it's the memory is released, when delete is called, and so on. But it's done, it doesn't have jagged ends, right? So you don't cut yourself with this. It's not very dangerous.
Okay.
So it's nice because C++ has this great ability, because Frostrup thought about the language very well, that you can do things in a way that you don't pay any penalty, any performance penalty. So you still have very good abstraction with the small classes, but you don't pay any price because the optimizer can go until the end and transform your very nice abstract code into metal super fast.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have some of the smartest compiler writers in the world working on your team. So the things that you can do. I mean, one of the things that's interesting that people don't really think about very much that you guys have innovated on in that space is Phoenix, which could be really useful for developers in C++ to have control over optimizations, you were mentioning.
Right.
Or even static analysis of the code. I mean, I trust maybe to trust the machine more than the humans. So I really trust when my compiler tells me, hey, I don't really understand your code yet. I mean, what the hell are you trying to do, right? When slash analyze tells me, hey, what's going on here? I mean, are you really multiplying sides of char multiplying by 2? Is that really what you want to do? You say, no, you're right. Yeah. Or maybe even if it's not right, I can write it in a clearer way. So if the machine doesn't understand it, then it's probably better.
Yeah. We have done a lot in this space with, and there have been lots of Channel 9 videos, I think, on /GS and safe exception handling and the safe CRT and check slash analyze. So you're right, C++, jagged edges, Code Red, Lynda, name your, circa 1999 worm, right? But now we've really invested in all of these things, and in fact, their policy within Microsoft, when we ship C++ software, we're not allowed to do it without going through all these steps of GS. Absolutely. We got to do slash analyze, and we really recommend that everybody do that stuff. Exactly, but there's more, right? You could actually be clean on all that stuff and still have security vulnerabilities, still have memory corruption bugs. Mm-hmm. So there's still stuff on the table for us to do.
Sure.
And it's, in many ways it's an arms race between people trying to break stuff and us trying to fix stuff. Right. And we're just, we're going to keep up.
Well, I mean, one of the things, clearly one of the problems with modern computing architecture, at least for its general purpose world, is shared memory. And so, could there be a C++ where you had software isolation, like isolated processes, but you're writing in C++ to solve the C++ engine, but the engine would take care of instrumenting and ensuring that you don't overwrite memory, but then would that upset people like Cade, who are like, wait a minute, something's insuring something. I want to insure it.
Well, I don't want to pay a performance cost to insure it. So if you think about a language that says, I guarantee you'll never go past the end of an array, because every time you try to access an array, using square brackets, I will do a range check for you. And then the C++ programmer says, I'm not paying, for that if, but I'm going through a loop. So you can't take really naive approaches to protecting people. It's not so much that I don't want to be protected as that I don't want to pay the performance cost. And what you said about getting safety without a performance penalty, and it requires like a big brain to do it.
Well, they have them. And
but they have
really
them, so
it
they're
is.
Doing it.
Well, it is. The onus is on Microsoft.
Right.
So we're building these tools. So since we're still in the tool space, I want to ask you, because I have gotten this feedback from other developers. In fact, one of them wanted me to mention this, but I told them I'd be doing another C++ interview. And that was, they still believe that as of VS 2005, and even beta 2 of Orcus, that the C++ IDE experience still is not even close to where where the managed guys have. Now, obviously, we understand that given the complexity of...
It's a harder problem.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what's the future of that?
We're fixing it.
Okay.
So this is, good segue. So this is our investment for the post VS 2008 era. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of our team focused on this very problem. One of the things we did during the VS 2008 cycle, actually, we had a good chunk of our team, particularly the compiler front-end team, looking at why is the experience not as good? What's making it hard? And it turns out, we've got this compiler that was, in many ways, has an architecture from the Ronald Reagan era. It's old, not a lot of memory. And we've built on it and made it do IntelliSense and made it do templates and we've added all this stuff to it over the years. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, it's this, this DOS compiler architecture. Mm-hmm. And to a large degree, that's what's holding us back.
Okay.
I think we made great strides and great steps backwards in 2005. The steps forward we made were in terms of accuracy, correctness, completeness, the IntelliSense and browse and nav experience. The step back we made was performance, because it takes a long time in C++ to look at all that code and go, yeah, that's right. So now we're looking at more creative ways of, what's the minimal set of things we can look at when you hit dot or arrow to give you the right list of stuff.
And
we've got, some of the smart guys on the team really focused on this problem of figuring out, how do we do that? What's the new compiler architecture we need for the next 25 years to be able to offer really responsive feedback? How can we offer IntelliSense in different scenarios that people aren't thinking of? How can we do smart tags where, again, no specific product plans here, but we talk around the halls of, wouldn't it be cool if you went C out, blah, 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 and the compiler gave you a smart tag that said, oh, I noticed you're calling C out. Would you like me to pound include IOStream for you? Nice. Where right now you have to wait until you compile and it says, oh, I don't know what C out means. If you're lucky.
You get 4,000 errors.
Or you could do background compilation like VB does. Yes. C Sharp doesn't even do that.
Red squigglies is another thing that you get when you do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't understand what printf means. Are you, do you want me to add this included for you?
We're definitely thinking things plugins, people can write their plugins because they get more information from the parser. And parsing C++ is so complicated. Everybody's trying to redo the same thing, even external teams and so on.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about the challenge of pressing dot. If X is some class, it's instance of some class that's multiply inherited, when you hit dot, IntelliSense has to offer everything from all the different base classes going back, potentially up a horrible tree.
Yeah.
That's a problem that the other languages, they went, no, we only do single inheritance.
Well, that's maybe there's something there.
But multiple inheritance, like mixins are great.
We're not giving it up.
Don't give it up.
We're keeping it, but the thing we can do in that space, and we've got some of our PMs looking at this now, how do we sort that list? Is it alphabetical? Or is there a way we can come up with an algorithm to predict
what came from where?
What's the top 10 most likely things you're going to do when you hit dot?
Yeah.
And in some cases, you can guess well, and in some cases, you're better off just being alphabetical because there's no way you can know.
But now, before you guys go off and invent this, insanely amazing stuff, how important is that to you, Kate?
When IntelliSense first came out, and I think it came out in VB first. Yeah. Some of us would mock it and say, please, I'm able to remember the names of my member functions, But the fact is that when it's fast, it lets you type at the speed of thought. So you actually do know that you want to call the increment salary function, but you don't feel like typing all those letters. So you type I tap, right? And where, therefore, you can have a problem is if it takes longer to pop up, then you're typing into space, you lose all of the benefit. It's not it gets 10 out of 10 if it's fast and it gets 8 out of 10 if it's slow. A very small delay goes down to getting 0 out of 10.
Got it.
And so that's what they don't have any room for, it's okay. They really have to make it as fast as I can think, otherwise I'll type increment salary myself.
Just
and I'd like to at least see the letters appear on the screen as I type. So
that's interesting.
So we set a really, really high bar for you guys. We're like, I need you to be as fast as I can think. And can you get on that tomorrow?
Our user experience team actually did testing on this very thing. And there's an absolute Pavlovian thing that happens here where people get trained, you know, the bell rings, you got to salivate, you hit the dot, you expect to pop up, and we find that it's not just you hit the dot and people go, oh, nothing there, I'll keep going. You stop them dead in their tracks. It's like you've hit the big red button on the factory floor.
Right.
You've shut down their coding experience.
And then so whatever was in my head falls out.
Exactly. You drop this mental context. And it's a bit, yeah, you're right. You've got to, we even have some metrics around how fast. I forgot what the number is. But there's a certain number of milliseconds that
absolutely
you need to pop that thing up.
Well, it needs to be as fast as C-sharp. BB.net. I mean, yeah. C-sharp, I mean, all developers get into the zone. And when you're talking about, you know, you're in the zone, you've got it, and it's coming out of your fingers, and all of a sudden, something stops you, you get mad, and you start cussing.
Yes.
And you know, so you have to be as fast as C-sharp.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. And which is a much simpler base class library than what you guys have. I mean, or at least it's architected much more linearly or understandably.
We do have some advantages, actually, in this space that we don't take advantage of right now. For example, in C-sharp and VB, the compiler has to look at the entire assembly, at least the entire namespace, as a whole, and note everything that's in there across your entire project. In C++, because we have header files, we only need to look at that one CPP file and the headers that it includes. Granted, that could be Windows.h, which means it, you know, a zillion things, but still, we don't have to know about the whole project. We just have to know about what's in that header file. And so we're trying to play some tricks right now to be able to be as responsive as they are, taking advantage of the fact that we don't have to know about the entire world.
So when people have, you know, 8 CPUs or 16 cores, this will be no big deal because you guys will be very concurrent.
Right.
And it'll just blaze.
We'll fly.
We'll have Erlang shoved into your engine.
Our flying cars will take us to
Oh, also, I mean, talking about the libraries, sure, probably in C-sharp there, a lot of people just use the framework, but if you think in C++, there is those people with 10 million lines of code, and probably 8 million lines are libraries they developed in the last 10 years. So it's not just parsing the library and the framework and so on. You have to parse that code and present intelligence on their classes.
Yeah.
So that's also something interesting. I parse C++ we have the H5s. You also have to pick them up, all of them.
So do you think, I mean, as a C++ developer yourself, I mean, with something like the ability to pre-initialize, you know how, like, Vista indexes everything?
You can say,
I'm using this index.
It's not that these 8 million lines of code are changing every day, all of them, right? You maybe compile them once.
Because it takes 7 hours.
Yeah, it takes 7 hours to compile. And you compile them overnight, and you have that information. You can maybe store it on a server, like a simple server, stuff like that. There are a lot of things we can do, and we are doing that.
Excellent. Cool. And that's cool.
It's a bright future.
It's a bright future for unmanaged developers. That's great.
Absolutely.
You know?
We prefer native.
Native. You got it.
They can be well-managed native developers.
You can't really manage a C++ developer, right? You got to leave them alone, throw them some meat, throw them some Mountain Dews once in a while, just leave them alone, right? I'm just playing. But that's great. This is great to hear that you guys are really going to make people like Kate happy and understand that you haven't been left out. It's good that you've made amends on the MFC stuff, because that's sort of like IE that was forgotten for 5 years.
Yes.
And now it's back.
Now it's back.
And that's very good.
Yeah.
And it didn't even require Firefox for us to pick it back up.
No, it just required people going, dude, what's going on? That's great. Well, any more questions for these guys, Kate? What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? Are you happy with what you managed to get in to 2008 and into the subsequent drop?
Well, I, speaking for myself, I'll let Ollie answer for himself. For us, 2008 was a constrained release. There were some things we needed to do. We needed to make IntelliSense better, and we did. We needed to do some key work around the libraries with MFC, and we're doing that. We needed to make a step toward the new standard with TR1, and we're doing that. And we we had this MQ thing, which folks have talked about in Visual Studio. We got out of debt, man. We had a ton of bug debt of just old stuff, and we got out of all that. It's like we paid off our bug credit cards.
Great.
And so we sort of have a new lease on life in terms of quality. So I'm really happy with the fact that we were able to know what problems we needed to solve in 2008, to solve those, to get a piece of the team already working on VS10, solving those hard problems, and really, you know, pay off the credit card debt so that we can, we're not going to spend on credit cards again. We're going to pay cash for everything now.
Great.
Good. Wean yourself from that stuff.
Yeah, we did. So, Ollie, what about you? Are you happy?
I'm happy. I'm happy, especially with the new updates we did with MFC.
Your name means happy.
My name
That's
is
right, Andrew. Contented. Everybody, you are, you know what? You are always content.
I am always content. It's in the genes, man. Always content. Yeah, that's right. No, it's true. I don't know why. My family is always like that. So.
Well, contented, that's your name. It's a great trait.
Yes.
You're lucky.
So, but I mean, it was a very good release, especially with the addition. I was very happy we had TR1 as well, because we both do the UI advance and the basic C++ advancement.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's very core, and these are all these new things coming up from VC10, both from a standard point of view, from us, Windows 7 coming out, and so on. So, that's very good. And we have a good team. The guys are working hard all the time. I'm not doing anything. So just here talking to Charles, drinking coke.
So one of the questions I would ask, based on what you just said, was there was a time in C++ history where Microsoft was looked at somebody who'd come in and you know, bastardize the language, is one way I've heard. Now that you guys have this focus, and you're going to start getting really innovative, you know you are, on extending the native language, are you going to remember to stay true to...
We are definitely doing it in the right way. So
good.
Probably got beaten also myself, got beaten a couple of times by that. But we also have the right people in the standard committees, in the standard committee. So I'm sure we can find the right space to do the right innovation, so you don't have to wait. Because the standard, fortunately, is slow, standardizing and so on. It needs to basically think the de facto standard and make it a real standard.
Excellent.
But we, as a Microsoft, we kind of have the, like you said, the onus of going out and say, hey, we should do this thing this way at least. Or we propose something. It doesn't need to be the only way to do something. But we did it with Secure CRT.
Yeah.
We are going to do more. We have this investment in the libraries and especially in the understanding and loading this kind of big project and so on. And those are very important things we have.
Cool.
We're really part of the process now, whereas before, I think we were just kind of doing the product what we felt needed to be done in years past. Now we've got, you know, two members of our team are on the C++ standards committee, one member of our team is on the C standard committee, and it's a two-way street, so we need to take stuff from them and implement it in the product, and our customers expect that, particularly the multi-platform ones that need to have code that compiles in multiple platforms. But then the committee also looks to Microsoft to say, you know, what are you guys doing in the compiler that your customers really dig on? Because we want to think about including that in the standard. And in fact, the current C committee, whereas the C99 standard was, I think, the standards body, put a lot of stuff in that standard that wasn't necessarily commercially popular at the time.
The vendors weren't all lining up begging for it to be finished, no.
And we still don't have a C99 compliant compiler and libraries, for example, right now. And people aren't beating down the door for it either. For the new C standard, they're saying, hey, Microsoft, hey, you know, GCC, hey, Intel, what are you doing that people like? Mm-hmm. And then they want to put those things in the standard.
What they use
is yeah.
C or C on the wall, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, one of the things that users of C and C++ are seeing around the world is as we move into multi-core, many-core, I mean, of course, we can't touch on this too deeply for two reasons. A, I'm taking up way too much of your time. B, there really are no answers yet. But one of the things that we are seeing in the managed languages are additions of functional constructs, you know, like lambda expressions, which you can then build link on top of and stuff like that. So what's the feedback like? How do you as a C++ developer feel? I mean, would you like to be able to do link in C++?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, know, Ollie keeps saying we're doing this TR1 stuff. So that includes Lambda. And that includes, type inference.
Pseudo-Lambdas.
Pseudo-Lambdas?
So the temptation is irresistible to say, oh, you have Lambdas, and you have this thing where I don't have to type out what the name, what the type of the variable is. You'll figure it out based on what comes back.
Uh-huh.
What would that enable, boys? You know? Yeah. And I can only speculate, but it's a, you know.
Cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Absolutely.
So that sort of plumbing, that sort of infrastructure stuff, which is actually coming from the C++ standards, then once you put that plumbing and that infrastructure in the language, that can open some doors.
Outstanding. And, well, hey, it's always great to talk to you, especially seeing you again. Saw you last year.
Yes. Yeah.
And see, there are real live C++ developers, people. Just kidding.
There's a lot of them here.
You know, your talk, there was a lot of people. Your talk, there was a lot of people. Your talks, there's lots of people.
Coming here and really seeing the buzz and the excitement, and there's times, occasionally you talk about what you do at parties, it usually stops fairly quickly. But even at geeky parties, people will say to me, like, isn't that kind of old-fashioned and over with? And it's really nice to be able to say, no, it's got lots of vibrant new stuff happening. It's fun to be part of.
All right. Well, hey, keep up. Keep it up, keep innovating, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.